Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando. I'm the man that brings you this podcast that is live and indirect from Providence, Rhode Island, via Columbus, Ohio. And welcome to episode 116. I gotta tell you right now, this is gonna be a unique episode. And in fact, I'm very excited to bring it to you because I did something when I recorded this episode that I haven't done in quite a while. And that is to go live, as I'm using air quotes that nobody has seen. That's right, go live on location to a place and sit down and talk to my guest. And, well, let's go ahead and let's talk about it. I went to What the Rock, which is a great store, now over on Indianola Avenue. It used to be down in the Short North, but when you're talking about rock and roll apparel and rock and roll gifts, this is the place you want to go, is What the Rock. And Ken Epstein, the man behind Nick's Comics, has a kind of a store within a store, if you want to call it that, in What the Rock. And Ken wanted to talk a little bit about all the things going on there at the store, about all the different projects he has going on with Nick's Comics, and of course also talk a little bit about space, because, well, as you're listening to this, space is ongoing, because I am recording this on the 22nd of March, and of course, March 25th and 26th at the Northland Performing Arts Center is where the Small Press and Alternative Comics Expo is going to be, and I'm very excited to be there. I'm going to be table mates with Brian Lau. I think we're going to have a great time. I'm looking forward to meeting all the people. I just spoke to Dar Naragi a couple of days ago, and he was also excited for space. He's looking forward to being there. Brent Bowman, of course, is going to be at his table as well. Those guys coming up with, of course, Persia Blues Volume 1 and 2. I didn't really even ask if 3's on its way, but I know that it's in the works. But nonetheless, so you're going to see everybody down there. Everybody that, quite frankly, has appeared on this podcast, or I should say quite a few, maybe not everybody, I don't know. I can't make that guarantee that everyone that has been on this podcast will be down there, but quite a large number of those folks are going to be there, from Brian Canini and Derek Baxter, to Brian Lau, to, of course, Victor Dandridge is going to be there, Michael Nino, Ken Epstein, a whole host of folks. So come on down if you get the opportunity. It is Space, the Small Press and Alternative Comics Expo. It is March 25th and 26th at the Northland Performing Arts Center. I almost didn't get that out. I don't know how I tripped over that. NPAC, as the kids call it. It's over there on Morse Road. Check out BackPorchComics.com for all the details, such as hours and whatnot. It is free to get in, so you have no excuse for not coming by either Saturday or Sunday and saying hi to all the great creators and artists that are going to be there, and including yours truly. So, all right, with that, I'm going to take a real quick break, and on the other side of my break, I will be back to talk to Mr. Ken Epstein as we go live from What the Rock.
Trivia Geeks, the Unpredictable Game Show podcast, is back with a brand new season. They've got a new host, new games, and a new day and time. But that's not all. Now you can download their companion app, TrivNow, and play along in real time. Watch Carrie on YouTube as she tries to convince her partner that his Dark Knight hasn't risen in years. Listen on Diamond Club and Alpha Geek Radio, Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can also follow the show on Facebook and Twitter and get all the latest updates and showtimes.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're in for a special edition here of the PBD Cast. We are live at What the Rock here on Indianola Avenue in Columbus, Ohio. I am talking to Ken Epstein while we're here in the store. Ken, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good, you know?
I'm excited to be here today.
Well, you may, folks that are listening at home, you may hear some other individuals coming up to check out or to ask questions or whatnot. So this is what happens when you're live. So anything could happen. Anything at all.
You ever see that episode of WKRP where Howard Hessman, Johnny Fever is live from a stereo store?
I don't believe I've seen that
and
one.
They get robbed, of course, while he's live on the air. But because it's WKRP, yeah, the police don't ever come because nobody's listening. That was an excellent TV show.
And hopefully nobody robs you here while I'm here.
They would be, I think, upset with the take.
All right, well, we'll talk a little bit about the store here, but, you know, the last time that we talked, and I mean really talked, I mean, let's be honest here.
It's been a little while.
It's been a while, yeah, since we've really sat down and really chatted.
It was the old library.
It was the old library. Episode 59, as a matter of fact, and then episode 64 when you were teamed with Bob Corby talking about a little space, but some changes have gone on for you, both professionally and personally.
Yes.
So, quit your job.
I did quit my job. It's actually not related to the changes.
No, okay.
And we probably shouldn't talk too much on that. That was more of a definitely a personal decision,
okay, yeah,
and I will be going back to a day job soon.
Okay, well, but,
I think people have this romanticized vision of me having quit my job so I can publish comics and run the store full time, and that was never the intent.
Gotcha. But definitely you have your own space here at What the Rock as well.
Yeah.
So how's that going for you?
It's going pretty well. It's, I don't remember if we covered it on, I know we've talked about it. I don't remember if we covered it on the previous interviews, but I started as a retailer. I started selling comics and records and small shops and online. And so this is kind of a return to form for me, and that's nice because I felt like I was missing the connection in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
That the people who like the records I like and the comics I like and the magazines I like should be reading my comics. So now I can have them all together in one place again.
Yeah,
and you know, I can point it out to people. It's like,
yeah. And so What the Rock has moved, originally many folks that live here in Columbus know it was down in the Short North area, but now has moved to the new location up here.
Up in Clintonville, yeah.
Up in Clintonville, correct, over on Indianola Avenue. So how's the new shop? Because it's only been open since January.
Well, I think it's good. I mean, you'd have to ask the main proprietors, Mike and Heather, about it overall. I didn't have... when you open a business in January after a traumatic election for a lot of people.
I thought you were going to say after the Christmas holiday, but we'll go with that as well.
I think the election left a lot of people spent.
Okay.
So in my perception, there hasn't been, and I think it carries over to a lot of other things as well, but I think people have been kind of slow to respond to this idea of, hey, there's a cool new shop you need to go to when it's cold out, it's, you're worried about deeper things.
Right, sure. Yeah, most definitely.
And that kind of thing. So a little slow so far, but that's not unexpected on my part.
Sure, and you're right next door to Elizabeth Records.
Yeah.
And just a short jaunt, like, I think, what, four stores down is the Studio 35, or four shops down is 35?
More or less, I guess I never counted it out.
So you're in a nice area where there's going to be a lot of foot traffic, so hopefully that will help out, especially when summer comes around.
I think so. Somebody going, not coming. But pardon that. But this is a neighborhood of Columbus that I've lived in for a long time.
Mm-hmm,
so it's
mm-hmm.
it's nice to be adding to the community.
Gotcha. So with your new space here and What the Rock, I think that you mentioned in your blog that you were going to be really focusing in here in these next few weeks or whatnot as you're transitioning between jobs and honing some of your skills as a writer, as a creator and whatnot.
Yeah.
How's that process going?
A little more slowly than I thought it would.
Okay.
I don't know. Everybody says I'm crazy when I say it because I got this store up and running. I got a website up and running.
Mm-hmm.
I did get my second issue of the Tales from the Crypt zine out, but I don't feel like I've accomplished a lot in this period of time.
So what specifically are you working on? Are you just working on?
I'm working on the second. I'm working on the second issue of my book. Buck Slaughter's Book of Rock and Roll Facts,
okay.
Which is the one that is actually loosely based on my experiences as a record store owner,
okay.
and more specifically on the dumb stuff that tends to fall out of my mouth when I'm talking about the music that I like and the literature I like, because I think nowadays I'm less strident than I was in years past, but you know, I have opinions and I express them, and they're not always
received well.
No, I think they're generally received well because they come from a place of earnestness, but sure. They're often presented as facts when they are in fact opinions.
Okay. All right.
And that's the kind of the premise of the book is the, you know, the main character Buck Slaughter, who is more or less me, serves as a cipher for the community and the two customers that he has, which is also an ongoing joke that he only has two customers. But you know, it's what I like focusing on in that book is actually the idea that this guy is sitting here waiting and these two customers come in on off, and the two customers are so much more infinitely cooler than he is, but he's this guy spouting nonsense about what he thinks. And they put up with him because, you know, he does have like this distinct sense of taste that he provides to the community.
Okay, cool. You said there's a second volume of that coming out?
Yep, first one came out last year. Mm-hmm. I don't remember when. Maybe just in time for the Columbus Crossroads. Maybe that's when I put it out.
Okay.
But it's the first one that I've illustrated myself.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which
How'd you find that process?
Very enjoyable, but really? It's very time consuming.
Okay.
And I think that's why I'm not as far along on it now as I wanted to be, because I would prefer just to sit down and write and go and pass it off to somebody and move on to the next idea. But this project isn't letting me do that.
Why'd you decide to do it yourself? Do it all yourself. Why not hand it off to somebody that you've worked with in the past?
Because it was a very personal project. Okay. And I finally developed the confidence again to be doing that, because I went to school. You hear stories about people that had great teachers who really influenced them to do great things. I honestly had the opposite experience. And I had a lot of teachers who frowned on the kind of comic art I wanted to, didn't give me very good advice, and made me hesitant to put my best foot forward in what I was doing. And it took me
encouraging, they were discouraging.
Yeah, and it took doing Nick's Comics and working with artists and kind of helping them through some of that kind of stuff to get me to the point where it's like, oh, I can do this. And it's, I think the best compliment I got is my artwork's crude but effective. somebody laid that one on me, which, you know, that's, I'm cool with that.
Okay.
crude but effective, I think should be my motto.
That would look good on a banner.
That would look good on the we made that we had that conversation off,
oh,
didn't
fair.
We?
Yeah, about banners. About you're not banners. Using banners anymore. Shows because nobody pays attention to them.
No one pays attention to them. Okay. Maybe a giant one that was just a canvas that had crude but effective, like scrawled on it in black
maybe
paint.
You should do like Clerks. Just I kind of like that sheet and write that in.
I assure
know,
you,
shoe
we are.
Polish. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Crude but effective, right there.
I kind of like that idea. I don't know if I'll have time to go to like a Blix and get a giant canvas and stand tomorrow. But
uh-oh, I know what we're going to see at Space next weekend. Uh-oh. I'm to blame for this idea, Bob.
Bob would roll with it. Bob would like it.
So what's some other projects you're working on?
Well, you know, it's kind of... The setting up this retail spot, the brick and mortar, and the website has taken up more time than I thought it would.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, I got to focus on getting the Buck Slaughter thing done.
All right, there we go.
All right, so yeah, you know, I'm working on the retail space, and the idea is, I didn't want to be so dependent on things like comic shows and.
Crowdfunding. Yeah.
I wanted another source of revenue, but one that, you know, gelled with what I do and would help me grow my audience. Like the Kickstarter thing, people always talk about that growing your audience. It just hasn't been my experience.
Yeah, you know, I know one of the things that you mentioned too on your blog is that you're looking for a different way in which to, you know, continue to do Nick's Comics and continue to be a force in the industry, so to speak. And I know you mentioned that, you know, crowdfunding is obviously kind of maybe not going to be the best idea, but you mentioned...
Well, I'll still probably do it, but sure, yeah, I would like it to be more...
Well, like, you mentioned something about the Make 100?
Which I.
So, could you fill us in? What's
that was something I didn't end up actually doing.
Okay.
But that was in January. Kickstarter had sent out emails to, I assume, a select number of previous...
Contributors.
And the idea was you were supposed to come up with, you were going to make 100 of something.
Okay.
And that was the whole premise of the Kickstarter, and they would promote it. And I don't know if they did promote it. I didn't get my act together to, like, come up with a viable project that I was going to make only 100 of for some reason. Actually, my idea was that I was going to do 100 catalogs and promo copies of the first four issues and send them out to 100 record stores, which I still may do at some point. But, okay. But it wouldn't be part of that anymore. Mm-hmm. But it was too much. I get on myself for not accomplishing enough. And oh man, definitely pick those up and read them. Those are the comics that I publish, and every record or comic you buy otherwise helps me continue to put those out.
Okay.
But. So we're talking about Make 100 and Kickstarter.
You were pretty successful with your Kickstarters, right? You never had any that failed, right?
No, that's not true.
Is it not true?
There are a couple of times I asked for considerable sums of money to do a whole year, an ambitious slate for a whole year.
Okay.
And both times I did that, they didn't pan out. So, you know, I just don't have that reach through Kickstarter like a lot of people do, which is fine. But yeah, the individual issues that I've done over the years, or the small subscriptions, that's always worked out fine.
Yeah, okay.
But there's, you know, for whatever reason, there's a group of people who will never respond to that model of selling comics. I've had people tell me it's the same as begging, which I don't know, maybe it's true, but I don't mind. I ain't too proud.
But you also have mentioned too that maybe looking at projects that have a lower budget might be the best way to go.
Exactly.
Okay.
Or, you know, just looking at it as a pre-sale mechanism, because, you know, I can run a pre-sale on comics on my website, and I might get, you know, 5-10 people who respond to that. But a Kickstarter, you get 20-30 people who buy your comic in advance, that kind of thing. So it's good for that, and I'll probably continue to do that to some degree. You know, it's not enough. There's just a whole group of people that you're not reaching.
Sure, you know, and I think that.
And I had friends straight up like email me, telling me, you need to find another way to raise money. It's like, all right.
Well, and I think the two, you know, when you talk about.
I would like to note that none of those friends have bought anything off of my website or visited the shop. I am keeping a list.
Well, you know, hey, keep them honest, man. Keep them honest.
No, it's a petty little list that I keep in my head. I would never actually like be in somebody's face about that. All right.
So, let's talk about Tales from the Crate.
Let's talk about Tales from the Crate. I love it.
All right, because you have the first two issues out.
I do.
And you have a third one on tap.
I do.
Okay. So tell the fans that are listening at home what's Tales from the Crate.
All right. It's a return to my zine loving days, as opposed to comics that, you know, there's cartoon artwork I make inside, and the cover, every cover is a spoof of an old EC Comics cover.
Mm-hmm.
But inside, the premise is I take $50, a $50 budget to a record sale, like at a store or at a record fair. And I write about the records that I buy.
Okay. All
so
right.
so every issue is about me getting down and dirty in these crates and telling you which records I liked, why I bought them, you know, or any miscellaneous odd facts I want, I know about them, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So it's kind of a tribute to the style of store that I love, that I kind of modeled mine after, where, you know, you go in not sure what you're looking for, as opposed to I don't want this to sound like I'm bashing modern comic shops.
No, but
there's an element of expectation going in that the person comes in kind of knows what they want.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
And it's true. It's true of record stores that carry a lot of new vinyl as well. But I like my place to be more of a. It's a room with a bunch of boxes, and who knows what is in there.
Is it like the thrill of the hunt?
It is. Yeah, it is. Okay. It is. And that's what Tales from the Crate is about. Is about, I only have so much money. This is what I got for it.
Yeah.
And I've done 3 shopping trips so far, and I've written about 2. I got the third one, which was at Lost Weekend Records, where Kyla runs Lost Weekend, essentially did a sale to lure me in to write an issue about his shop.
I think that's called cross-promotion, isn't it?
It is, it is. And Kyle's always been great about that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got the cover art done for that, and I've listened to the records, but that's about as far as we've gotten.
Gotcha.
But I don't know, it's... In a way, it's a veiled... it's a veiled attempt to get other people to pay for my bad habit of buying records. Because, you know, if I sell 50 issues, I've pretty much paid for the records and the printing, I'm back to zero.
Right. So, in these 2 issues so far, what's the best gem that you have found? What's the thing that you were like, oh my God, this is so amazing? Can you think of what that might have been?
No.
Okay.
No, because it's not been that kind of luck so far. I haven't, you know.
So there's been some things maybe you found that you were like, oh, these are enjoyable.
This is enjoyable. I like this. I'm keeping this. Okay. This is enjoyable. I'm going to resell it.
Okay.
You know, I also do, you know, I take records that have no sleeves and I draw new sleeves for them.
I was just going to ask that. That was going to be my next question there.
Yeah. So I do that, and I resell those, and, you know, that also helps kind of pay for the habit and kind of thing. But, you know, I found some stuff that's cool, some stuff I had never heard before, or stuff that I was curious about but never wanted to pay full price before, you know, and that kind of thing. But nothing like, it's like, oh, my God, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
You know, nothing like that so far. That happens, but that's... You know, that's part of the idea of digging through crates, is that doesn't always happen.
Right,
you have to have
right.
patience and persistence, and you have to have a little bit of luck on top of it.
And I can relate to, as we talked off air, about comic book shows. You know, you go to those ones that have back in the day, they had the quarter boxes and the 50-cent boxes. You just rummage through and you'd find, oh, this looks interesting, or whatever. Once in a while, you could find that, oh, man. I need this to finish whatever set, you know, and that was always like the highlight of the day, man.
When you go home and it's that immediate thrill. But then, you know, you think about it a month later, 2 months later, the thrill's a little gone, baby.
Yeah,
you know, it wears off. Other than it's a happy glow of a memory, as opposed to that adrenaline surge of, oh my God, I need this.
Yeah.
You know, and I think both of those are viable, good, you know, good feelings.
Most definitely.
Legal good feelings.
Yeah, most definitely. So when you create your custom picture sleeves for these records, do you just kind of go off the cuff with what you envision, or do you do some research and go, well, this band, this is how the original sleeve looked, I'm going to kind of make it flat, or you just kind of go with your own ideas?
I go with my own idea for the most part.
Okay, sticking to whatever that particular song was about or whatnot?
Or my interpretation of it, or a dumb pun based on the... Because, you know, a lot of the times it's old 50s doo-wop love songs or something, which just have saccharine titles.
Yeah.
So I think one of the favorite ones I did was an old song called Chains of Love. It was Bobby Bland. And it was just a goofy, sappy song, but I made it into like an S&M thing where there's a dominatrix and you know, the guy wrapped in chains all smiling and they all have hearts around them, you know, because that's, you know, whatever does it for you.
That's actually where my mind went immediately when you said the title. I'm like, Ken, I hope that you, in my head, this is the voice, Ken, I hope you did an S&M shtick. And you did.
I did. And recently I got a copy of The Midnighters doing Solomon Burke's "Everybody Needs Somebody to Love," and you know, so it's a. Actually, I think that one's in there.
I think it's right behind me.
Yeah, and it's a guy sitting in a chair blowing up a doll.
Yeah,
you know, so I like having fun with it. Sometimes, if it's a particularly intriguing artist, I'll just do a portrait of the artist.
Okay.
But yeah, those I don't usually get too referential, as opposed to say some of the covers I do. Like I said, the Tales from the Crater are always a riff on old EC comic stuff. The Buck Slaughter covers are always riffs on album covers. Like issue one was a riff on the Otis Redding Dictionary of Soul, because it was the book of Rock and Roll Facts, so I did the Dictionary of Soul riff for the cover. And the second issue will be Jan and Dean had a great picture sleeve for the new girl in school where she's carrying books. So they'll all have book-themed covers that I reference.
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing. And I don't know how many people pick up on that. It's always happy to me when I drop something like that and somebody else picks it up and tells me about it. So
I will say I recognize that this was – I did not know what particular distributor, but I was like, this looks very familiar to like one of those horror comics. I'm going to honestly admit, I don't – Tales from the Crate 1, I don't know what that is.
That's actually there's a
– And I know no one at home I know knows what I'm talking about because it's an audio podcast. But well, just go with me. You can find it online. We'll talk about that in a little bit where you can find all of Ken's books and whatnot. But what
that's a reference of the Shock Suspense cover that actually William Gaines talked about in front of Congress when he was interrogated by the and that cover actually my guy has a gun, but it has a that cover had had a guy with an axe or half of his body and the woman's head. And in this case I put the gun on it, and then instead of a woman's head, it has a riff on another album cover for there was an upstate New York he's kind of a cult artist called Armin Schraubeck. It's a long name. You can look it up. But it's a long name, difficult to pronounce. But he had an album cover where it was just a picture of his head with a bullet hole through it. And the title was, a lot of people would like to see Armin Schraubeck dead is the name of the album cover. So I inserted that album cover into the...
But now that you mentioned the original...
Yeah, you can see it now, right?
Yes, I can plainly look at it and go, I got it. Yes, okay. Got it. Let's talk about some of the other books, though, that are available for Nick's Comics. You have Nick's Comics Quarterly.
Yes, that's the horror one.
Yes, it is. Nick's Western Comics.
Nick's Western Comics, which I'd like to do another issue of soon.
Okay, okay. Nick's Comics for Kids.
Nick's Comics for Kids, which...
How do you like writing those? Because, you know, a lot of the stuff that you... Right, and a lot of things that you create pushes the envelope a little bit. How do you find? Do you find that to be an easy transition?
No, I in fact, the third issue was written entirely by the artist Brian Kraft.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There aren't likely to be any more of those books. Yeah. So the first issue of the Western came with a record, and it was because Bob, the illustrator, is a noted musician here in town, so I wanted to show off the whole thing and you know all of his talents, and I wanted to make it clear that these comics were inspired by the spaghetti westerns and the soundtracks as well. Okay. But so I'm not going to make any more. I'm not going to press any more of
those. That's another one that's not going to be around.
That's that
particular issue.
That particular format for that issue isn't going to come back.
So it's not a big deal if in your eyes if you don't do another book, say you know the kids' book or. If you did something elaborate like that, you don't feel the need to continue to do that.
No, I mean, I think that makes them less special the more you do of it. Yeah. I mean, I'll do another comic and record set or maybe press some more records. But, but you know, that first one was it. And the people who were there, they got it. And the people who missed it, they got to go digging through the crates and hope somebody sold it. You know, but I don't know how many people are going to sell those.
Yeah,
I think those are neat enough that people are going to hang on to it.
Sure,
and it's you know that again that's kind of on a level that's the garage rock guy in me, the ongoing joke with like any band from the 80s or the 90s is that 500 people claim that they saw a particular show where you know there were 10 people there originally.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right,
or, right. You know, I was there in the day. It's like, yeah. Well, with comics, you can actually you can actually do something about it. You know, yeah. This is
there's
a
proof.
There's a proof that yeah. you got the one comic, you know, or some degree of the proof at any rate. Yeah, so that doesn't yeah. bug me.
Okay.
I mean, I want to keep doing the horror quarterly mm-hmm. as long as I can.
How about Belligerent Kitties? A favorite of mine.
It's a favorite of a lot of people.
Yes, it is.
And
it
I'm
is.
Just going to have to make some because people keep asking me about okay. it. But it's by far the least favorite thing for me personally
really?
That I've put out.
Okay.
Yeah, it's stupid.
For those that don't know, it's just random drawings of kittens and cats saying belligerent things.
Saying belligerent things, yeah.
Yeah, so...
It was very much spawned from the idea of that seems to be what people want these days.
Yeah,
like, so, going okay. through the internet, it's all kittens and belligerents.
There you go.
So, yeah, I'll do another one, and I'll probably, you know, we were talking about Kickstarter. So I think that one is a good example of one where I didn't do it the first time, but the second time around, that's something that you could put on a Kickstarter and make some mugs or calendars
yeah,
or
sure.
or the kind of things that, because, you know, in and of itself, it's not a lot of people like it, but, you know, it's something you sell for $2 a pop.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, it's not a, I'm not going to retire on Belligerent Kitties. I'm not even going to fund another comic off of Belligerent Kitties, you know, unless it's another $2 comic.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
it is what it is.
It is what it is, and people do like it.
Is there any pocketbook reprints as well? Is another Knicks Comics? Could you describe what that particular book is?
There's a lot of material out there that's just fallen out of print that's very similar to what I do.
Okay.
And so I'm always kind of on the lookout for it.
Oh, okay.
And for the artists and asking them, well, would you like to bring this back into print?
Okay.
And to date, there have been two. There's okay. been Mark Rudolph's Closing Doors, and mm-hmm. Mark is a regular contributor to Knicks Comics Quarterly. So that was an easy find. And then the second one was Pure Entertainment, which was originally released in 83,
okay.
I think it was, 83 or 84, which had a lot of the New York scene guys from that era, and their extended family. So that was kind of a personal honor to be able
to
reprint that, and I think they were all shocked. Like at the end of that was one that was a Kickstarter, and I'd promised them a percentage based on
mm-hmm.
you know the number of copies I printed and number of pages they had. So you know I was sending out $28 checks to guys, and I think that was the
hey, how you doing?
Excellent. I think that was the first time they had ever seen any money from the project,
well,
so they were happy
go.
With me.
There you go.
You watching the whole shop?
I'm watching the whole shop, and awesome. I'm on a podcast.
All right, Ken, so let's maybe back up a little bit for those folks that haven't listened to episode 59, where you first appeared. Or number 64 when you reappeared with Bob Corby. But so let's talk a little bit about how you got involved in your love of comics as well as your love of music. Were those things synonymous or were they separate?
They were separate, but then as you develop those tastes, you see the corollaries and where
sure.
they.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, now they're inseparable to me in my
yes.
mind, you know.
Uh-huh.
I see how they play off of each other, and I see the connections that maybe other people don't necessarily see
yeah.
between the two.
Yes.
So, you know, the music stuff came to me later, particularly my tastes now.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I liked comics from when I got them at 7-Eleven off the spinner rack. Like,
yes.
Like we were talking about. You know, but my taste in music didn't really get cemented until I went to college. I was a radio kid up until then. I knew what I heard on oldie stations and classic rock stations were the ones I liked. But, you know, I was devoted to them because the DJs were devoted to what they were playing, you know. So heavy diet of Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin or whatever. But it wasn't until I got to college and somebody gave me a third generation copy of Ramon's Mania that, like, it's like, oh, well, actually, this is the stuff I like from that. You know, I like the Kinks and the Who and the Stones and Tom Petty. Not so much the Led Zeppelin, the Pink Floyd, that kind of stuff, or, you know, Billy Joel or Elton John, not at all. You know, and that specifically that record, like, was where I cemented what I liked and what I didn't like. And then, interestingly enough, I have a copy of it now, not Ramon's Mania, but the next, like, third generation cassette that was passed around was a punk comp called Burning Ambitions, A History of Punk. And it's a double LP, but I never saw the LP back in college because it was always a 90-minute cassette that somebody had jammed the entire double album onto.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I was probably third or fourth generation of that cassette, re-recorded on the old dual cassette decks. And that kind of, like, showed me the broader range of the stuff I liked and got me into the looking for the more obscure stuff, and the notion of, if you like this band, this was a song they covered, go check out
the original version,
the source. And comics are the same way.
Yeah,
you know?
Who were some of those bands, real quick, if I may, that were on that compilation? Do you remember?
Yeah. I mean, I actually have a copy of it here, which is kind of cool. But it was mostly British bands. So there was the Buzzcocks, the Fall, the 101ers, which was Joe Strummer's pre-Clash band.
Okay.
Some Adamant song that was pre-Adam and the Ants. More.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, there was a lot. The Stranglers, and a lot of them became a lot of those tracks were songs that became typical of songs that were put on the on similar punk rock compilations to come, like, you know, the Strangler song, it's Get a Grip on Yourself, which is on every punk rock compilation. Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Excellent. So, you know, that kind of thing. I think probably the band that got me digging the most wasn't on that comp, though, was when I discovered the Cramps, and, you know, a good half of their catalog is cover material or their spin on an older song, or maybe a couple older songs mushed together. Mm-hmm. You know, that
and
kind
if,
of
if history reminds me correctly, the Cramps, was that Buster Poindexter?
You're thinking the New York Dolls.
His real name is
David
bad.
Johansson.
My bad. Yeah. Yes, David Johansson. Yes, yeah, thank you. Yeah. Sorry.
No, the Cramps. The Cramps were actually originally an Ohio product, from Northern Ohio, kind of the Akron area. But they spent time in Los Angeles, you know, the California scene, and they were part of the original New York CBGB scene,
right, kind of thing. Yeah,
but anyway, they were the band that kind of got me reaching out and making connections, and since they were into Pulp Fiction and movies and stuff like that, they led to me making those connections between other kinds of media. You know, so
is there a particular genre that you do not particularly enjoy in music? Because you like a lot. Look, I'm looking. There's a lot of different genres of music back here. So what's maybe the one that you don't particularly enjoy?
Modern country music.
You know what? I agree. There's very few modern country music that I dig. There is a few here and there, but it's very
it's just so
overprocessed.
Yeah. Let's see what else I don't like. I don't really care for most prog rock stuff.
Really?
Yeah, I don't need Yes or Yellow. To me, that's all, like, you know, people. That's all stuff people who get off on talking about genius like. And I don't.
No, it's pretentious.
It's pretentious. It's nobody can listen to those records and then just sit down and make them, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you listen to a Little Richard record, you can sit down and try to bang out a piano song. You know, or if you listen to the Kinks, you really got me. It's not, you know, the genius of that isn't technical. It isn't.
Okay. No, I get what you mean. Yeah.
And that's kind of what I like.
Okay.
You know, it's, you know, so I, most of the Stadium Rock era kind of stuff.
Really?
You know,
yeah.
You know, like there's a cutoff for the Rolling Stones for me. There's a cutoff for the Who. There's.
I never got Pink Floyd.
I never got it.
I just never dug it.
I tried to like the Syd Barrett early psychedelic stuff because so many people I know whose music tastes are similar to mine like it, but I didn't care for it.
I don't dig it.
I never really cared.
Same. Yeah.
There are a lot where there are people who have similar tastes to mine like them, but I don't get it. I'm not a Tom Waits guy. I'm not a Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds guy.
Okay.
You know, it's all right.
Sure.
It's all legal. They can like whatever they want. But that stuff is
it's just not your cup of tea.
It's not my cup of tea, and it's you know, I don't want to be an anti-intellectual, but there's, because I'm not.
Yeah.
But there's a depth there that I don't appreciate.
Gotcha. All right, well, we're getting close to the end of this episode, so let's wrap up and talk about a couple of things. First of all, you on the internet are at nixcomics.com, N-I-X-comics.com.
And actually, there's a new site that's mail order that's all stuff similar to what I sell at the store, which is nix-retail.com.
There you go.
And nobody's bought anything from that website yet, so if you're the first, I'll send you a cookie or something as well.
Oh, your famous cookies.
Yeah.
Also, too, at Nix Comics, N-I-X, again, on Twitter, correct?
Yep.
And Facebook is?
Is Nix Comics. Facebook/ Nix Comics.
You got them all. Let's talk about the store, though. WhattheRock.com is where you can check out the store. So we'll give a little love to this fine establishment.
Yep.
And they are at 3039 Indianola Avenue in Columbus, Ohio. Tuesday through Saturday, 12 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Sunday, 12 to 6, closed on Mondays.
Closed on Mondays. And honestly, you know, it's a rock and roll crowd, so don't show up exactly at noon. I would say 12:30 to 7-ish.
There you go. And, hey, if you want anything in terms of rock and roll, like, you know, whether it's apparel, whether it's gifts, whether it's home goods, no matter what it is, this is the place. This is definitely the place, as you hear one customer leaving. Hopefully we didn't run him off, I don't think.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But anywho, so whatever it is that you need in terms of rock and roll paraphernalia, we'll call it, stop on by What the Rock or visit whattherock.com.
Yes.
There you go. Ken, you're going to be at Space, right, in a few days?
I will be at Space in
a couple
of days. All
right, let's talk real quickly. What do you love about Space?
Oh, man.
I mean, there's so much to love about the Small Press and Alternative Comics Expo, but what do you love the most about it?
It's the least tiered of any comic show I've ever been to.
Okay.
There's always an element at these shows of who's a special guest, who's the hot commodity at the moment, and it can be very cliquish. It can be very very
high school like
and cast like. I mean, there's these people don't talk to the people below them, whatever. And there is absolutely none of that at Space. None of that. It's the people who sign up get in and they get their table assigned to them regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody gets special advertising. Nobody's put above anybody else, because Bob Corby, who runs it, is one of the most egalitarian people I know in terms of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you know, because of that, you see a lot of really young and fresh talent, not necessarily young, but fresh talent, people who, you know, there are lots of people like me who didn't get started until their 40s as well.
Right. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But so young in terms of their career, I guess you'd call it. But, there's a lot of that fresh from the mind, slapped on the paper, didn't know what the hell I was doing, no input from anybody else kind of comic. And that has a beauty of its own that you know, once publishers are involved, you know,
it's
changes.
Like freedom. Yeah, it's freedom to do whatever you want. Experiment, man.
Yeah,
you know, it's art, so.
And if you like that kind of thing, that's the place to go.
There you go.
And you know, and it's exciting in that sense, as opposed to going to a bigger show. Like I went to the Small Press Expo in Maryland last year, and I just, you know, I did okay, but I didn't really feel the need to be there.
Okay.
As opposed to space, where you feel a need to be there and be in that soup.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I'm very excited to be there. And as people are listening to this, it's a couple days out. It'll be March 25th to 26th over at the Northland Performing Arts Center.
Week from today.
A week from today in which we are recording this. So stop on by. Stop on by. You can check out backporchcomics.com for all the details, such as hours and who's going to be there and directions and whatnot. And there's a link over on my page, pvdcast.com, for that. But you're going to be there.
Yes.
I'm going to be there. We're going to have a great time.
We are.
That's guaranteed.
And, you know, it's free to get in now.
It
used to be there was a cover charge to get in. And I don't know if he's learned to live to regret it or not, but I think a bunch of us were in Bob's ear about, you know, make it free to get in so that there's more money going into the pockets of the artists.
Exactly.
And so you could come and just look at stuff and not pay a dime.
Yeah, and hang out and say hello. But Ken, with that, let's go ahead and wrap this up real quick. Is there anything else you want to tell the fans that are listening at home? No?
Stay sick.
Monsters are real.
All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of my break, I'll be back to wrap up this episode. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Ken Epstein, hanging out at What the Rock, and I hope that you enjoyed that episode. I know that it got a little bit fractured, a little disjointed. To be honest, there was some customers that came in, and they started talking to Ken, and I was just rolling, and was just going to leave it in there, as I did with some other customers that came into the store, but they started sharing some personal information that I just didn't feel comfortable leaving in there, so I apologize. It was a little bit, you know, cut up a little bit. I tried to do the best I could with the editing, but hey, that's what happens when you're live, man. And definitely check out What the Rock if you're in Columbus. 3039 Indianola Avenue is the new address. It's right down from Studio 35. WhattheRock.com is the website for that great store. They're open Tuesdays through Saturdays, 12 to 7, Sunday, 12 to 6. And don't forget to check out what Ken's got going on over at Nix Comics, nixcomics.com. So it's about that time that you can hear it in the background. Oh yeah, you can. You can hear that music. And you know that means only one thing. It's Orlando's Fave! That's right. It's my time in the podcast where I tell you about something that I think is cool, something I think is awesome, something I think you should check out. And once again, it is movie related. Yeah, that's right. You know me, I'm a huge movie buff. But this past weekend, I went to the theater, albeit a few weeks since this film has come out. I've just been very busy. I haven't had an opportunity to go see it. But I went to go see the movie, Logan. I gotta be honest with you, I was really excited for this film. I thought that the trailer looked really good. In fact, I made the disclaimer, it was the greatest trailer that was out at the time. And I'm going to be honest with you, it didn't disappoint. That's right. You tried to give you a little shake and bake there, thinking maybe I was going to blast it, but no. Logan was a good film. I liked it. I thought it was a very good take on the tale. I thought that the relationship between Xavier and Logan was pretty well analyzed in this movie. I liked it a lot. The young lady that played X-23 was really, really good. A lot of violence, a lot of action, you know, very simplistic plot, but I think it worked. And the ending, too, was very fitting as well. So overall, I really enjoyed Logan, and that's my fave for this episode of the PVD cast. So if you haven't seen it, go out and see it, all right? And speaking of some other things you should do, let me list them. Well, one of the things you should do is tell everybody about this podcast. And there are 5 different ways to get this podcast. Through the online home of yours truly, pvdcast.com. It's also available through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, of course, Google Play, and SoundCloud. But no matter how you listen to this podcast,
rate, review, subscribe, if you will, please. And if you'd like to shoot me a quick email and get in contact with me, there's a couple ways you can do that as well. And that's simply by shooting an email to johnorlando@pvdcast.com or hitting me up on Twitter @pvdmvp. Or you can also contact me through Facebook. Of course, facebook.com/pvdcast, the PVDcast page. Check it out if you haven't already. It's gotten a little bit of a bump there this past week, so let's keep it going, people. But hey, nonetheless, I'm going to wrap things up. So I thank you for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later.